Hello and welcome to Talking Tudors, a fortnightly podcast about the ever-fascinating Tudor dynasty. My name is Natalie Gruniger and I'll be your host and guide on this journey through 16th century England. Are you ready to step through the veil of time into the dazzling and dangerous world of the Tudor court? Without further ado, it's time to talk Tudors. Hello everyone, welcome back to Talking Tudors episode 86. I'm your host Natalie Gruniger and it's wonderful to have your company. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge and thank the wonderful listeners who continue to support this podcast via Podbean Patron and thank everyone who's taken the time to rate and review the show. Your support and encouragement means a lot to me. If you love the podcast, if you never miss an episode, perhaps you'd consider becoming a Talking Tudors patron. It's easy to do. Just click on the Be My Patron on Podbean badge on the homepage of my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, or click on the Be a Patron button on the Podbean app. Join the Talking Tudors patron family, and in addition to receiving lots of Tudor-themed goodies, you'll be automatically entered into our patron-only monthly giveaways. September's prize is a Tudor book bundle featuring four titles by John Matusiak. A huge thank you to the History Press UK for sponsoring this wonderful prize. Now, on to today's episode. I'm thrilled that joining me on the show to talk about her hugely popular Instagram account, Royalty Now, is Becca Saladin. As a child, Becca's passions were always art and history. Her parents are both educators and they steadfastly fostered her interests in both areas. Becca's dad read her a book called Doomed Queen Anne from a young adult series about the Tudors when she was about 11 or 12. This sparked her interest in all things Tudor history. Now 29 and living in Dallas, Texas, Becca works full-time as a graphic designer. She started Royalty Now on Instagram as a hobby, a place where she could share her passion for art and history, and combine those with her skills as a graphic designer. The account grew much more quickly than Becca could ever have imagined. My conversation with Becca straight after this musical break, courtesy of guitarist John Sales. Welcome to Talking Tudors, Becca. How are you?
Great, Natalie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you on the show. Now, I wanted to begin by you just introducing yourself to our listeners and just telling us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so my name is Becca Saladin. I'm currently 29. I grew up in the Midwest of the United States, and I went to school for graphic design at Iowa State. Right now, I work full-time as a graphic designer in Dallas, and I live here with my fiance and my two dogs.
Now, I'd really love to hear more about your hugely popular Instagram account, Royalty Now, which I'm sure lots of our listeners have heard about, where you post images of what people from the past might look like if they lived today, and I absolutely love it. So when did you first start creating these digital images, and what led you down this path?
I would say that I've always been interested, and I think this is most people, and I kind of attribute this to being the reason that the account is strangely popular, for my opinion. And I think that's that people are really drawn to things that feel really personal about history. For instance, I think, I don't know that Pompeii would be maybe as popular today if there weren't the like visceral bodies of the people that are still preserved, or there's certain things about really preserved mummies, just things that make us feel really close to history that I really have enjoyed. So something I've always seen online and been really interested in, gotten that quality from, are things like the archaic people reconstructions, like the forensic reconstructions of people's faces. And then there's other people obviously online that do statue recreations and everything like that. And I've always just been like really drawn to those. And I am have always been kind of a Photoshop hobbyist. And when I and a digital art and drawing hobbyist. And so I was like, you know what, I can just put all these things together. Like, I already have Photoshop on my computer from work, and I can just put all these things together and make a drawing slash photo of what I think these people would look like today. And I chose to do it instead of just recreating or like making their portraits look more lifelike. I chose to actually bring it into the modern day just for relatability. I think it just adds a factor of like, oh, you could see her at the mall, or you could see them at an award show or something like that. So that's why they're in the modern day.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I'd love to have more recently you started adding jewelry and things like that. I think that, you know, made it easy for people to relate to them. And it's fantastic. I like that, how you've added that addition. And I agree with you totally that it is about how we relate to people, isn't it? I really love seeing the recreations as well of historical places when they do those kind of flybys, or, you know, of what a medieval town would have looked like. I think you can really place yourself there.
So I know. It's I've always thought about doing a, like finding a picture of an old room or something and kind of just like drawing on the details and drawing like historically accurate stuff. So maybe like room recreations, maybe that's in the future too. But yeah, just recreations. It's like we people love seeing things as they were. And we always just think of the past as so far away, or like a movie or like a book or something that is not real. And it's like, no, they were the real people. They felt the same things that we did. And I just love anything that makes you feel close to history and those people.
You've actually created some modern versions, we'll call them, of a number of Tudor personalities, including Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII and Elizabeth I. So what sparked your interest in Tudor history?
Yeah, so my parents are both teachers, and they were just really big on reading to us, giving us books and everything like that. And obviously in American schools too, we have this kind of like British file thing going. Like, we just learn a lot about British history and history of the UK. And I think it was actually my dad gave me a book, and I remember it. It was called Doomed Queen Anne. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one. It's like a young adult fiction book. And I remember the cover so well. And I probably read it when I was 12, and it just got me really interested. Obviously, for the same reason that most people are interested in the Tudors, is it reads like a soap opera, or it's just very relatable. It's kind of like a starting history thing where it's very easy to jump into their story. There's a very consistent narrative. And it was just funny because I was reading it, and I was probably learning all these vocabulary words and stuff that like didn't even make sense to me at the time. I kept telling everyone that Bessie Blunt, you know, how her child was illegitimate. I kept saying that her son was illegitimate. Like, I kept telling people that, and nobody knew what I meant. And I was just telling my parents that. I was like, he can't be king because he's illegitimate. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Glad you're reading. I think for the same reason that most people do get into the Tudors, is just the really fascinating story.
Absolutely. You really couldn't make that stuff up, which is what I always say. And I think just speaking about relating to periods of history, I think the Tudors is far enough back that it's fascinating. You know, it's intriguing. There were things that we kind of go, my gosh, I can't believe they did that. But not that far back that we can't relate to them. So I think it's just perfectly placed, isn't it, for
there's
us to be able
to. I love how there's always, I'll probably mention this later on, but it's kind of shocking how little information we have about the way that certain people looked. Anne Boleyn especially is so intriguing as well, because there's like so little known about her early life, and then she kind of just pops into the record, and then obviously there's so much recorded about her when she was queen, and then the portraits are struck, and, you know, like, we just don't have much from after. And so it's like you're just getting these little tidbits of Tudor information that are very interesting.
Becca, your work covers obviously many different periods of history. So do you research a little bit about each of your subjects before you begin transforming the images?
So I think for the most part, I do research on the ones that I don't know too much about. And at the very beginning, the reason the Tudor images, I'm not sure if you'll share them on your blog or whatever, they're kind of the older ones. They're not my favorite, most proudest moments. Some of them, I think Catherine of Aragon, Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard, Jane Seymour and Henry are all older. I'm actually in the process of reworking Henry the VIII right now and doing a new one, as well as working on Mary Boleyn, because there was that new portrait verified of her. So that's exciting. So they're my older ones. And obviously the reason for that is I was so excited to do them. They're like the first ones that I wanted to do right out of the gate when I started this, doing this as a hobby. And I obviously knew a lot about them, so not too much research needed, except for maybe on their looks or eye color, hair color, stuff that gets a little murky over time. But, you know, recently I get a ton of follower suggestions and suggestions from followers from all over the world, some people that I haven't heard of before. And I definitely do some cursory research before I start those. And then I do a lot of, I would say the most research goes into people's looks, just because of the nature of what I'm doing. And then at the end, I put together a summary of their life and, you know, the reason why they're still famous today.
And so you mentioned that you get suggestions from your followers on Instagram. Do you find that the Tudors get suggested a lot?
Yeah, I mean, now that they're done, people don't suggest them as much, but I think Lady Jane Grey was a very popular suggestion. And, you know, this is like one of the intricacies of this very specific niche of thing that I work on, but just I kind of held off on Jane Grey because there's not a contemporary portrait of her. And I mean, it's the same with Anne, and you can get close, but I think the closest, there was a engraving of Jane Grey that I worked from, which was probably likely to be a copy. And you just never know. It's very hard to research these things too, because you'll find it on like Wikimedia. I always try very hard to make sure they're in the public domain. And so you'll find it. And then there's not really that much resource for like who even painted or engraved it. And then obviously that one was in black and white. And, you know, what color hair did she have? There's conflicting accounts of her hair color, her eye color. So it's just like, you can go down this whole rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I always have to make an artistic decision.
But Becca, I want to hear more about the actual steps involved when you're creating an image. So you've decided on a person and you've done a little bit of research. What do you do next?
The first thing I do is start perusing the stock photo selection. So I have a iStock subscription, and then sometimes I use a site called Pexels, which is like a free stock photo site that's actually really good quality if anyone ever needs any good stock photos for free. And then I think that's actually one of the most important steps that I don't like, because it just is boring to me to like look through the images. But the most important thing is finding an image where you don't have to change too much later on. And so I've had it happen where, you know, you can kind of fudge like the angle of someone's head a little bit, or the hair color, or the skin tone a little bit, you know, within a certain range. And so the easiest way is to just find an image that works, fits the angle, has good hair, good lighting, everything, to make it easier to edit later on. So once I find a photo that I'm comfortable with that I like, sometimes I find three or like two that I like that I'll put together. So I'm like, okay, this has the perfect angle, the perfect face, everything, but the hair isn't right or something. I'll add different hair, or I'll add a different outfit, because I always am thinking of maybe what would that person wear. You know, we never know for sure, but I'm not going to put Catherine of Aragon and something really revealing. She was very religious, you know, so it's just that kind of thing. So once I get that portrait figured out, I put it in Photoshop and I put them side by side. And then I kind of grab the face from the original one to put over and just see how it fits. And I start masking that in. A mask in Photoshop, in case anyone's unfamiliar, it's like a layer that you put over and then you can erase it. And then, so for the most part, I used to do more where I would literally just kind of copy and paste it and then paint over it digitally. And that work, my work has improved a lot, which is one of the things I'm the most proud of. But it used to be my process. And now I do more of like a photo compositing technique. So I'll take and I'll find eyes from a different photo that look like the eyes, and then I'll morph them to fit. I'll find another nose, and that helps with adding texture to, you know, instead of the paintings are just very smooth and flat. And when you get the information from other images, pores and wrinkles and everything, it really helps make it more realistic. So I tend to kind of just replace all the features on the face, basically, and then I'll do kind of a layer of digital painting to even everything out, and then finishing touches, whatever else needs to be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work. I'm just thinking, wow.
Yeah, some of them, as I said, the image finding is probably the most important, because that saves a lot of time in the long run. So I'm posting one of Aristotle tomorrow, and I was kind of doing a pose of him at the beginning where he was hunched. He looked like he was thinking, which I loved because it's Aristotle. But as I was working, then he ended up just looking like he had no neck. And like I had to put a different photo in to make the neck and shoulders to kind of do that. So it saves you time when you find the right photo at the very beginning. Some come together fairly quickly, like an hour or two, and some take crazy long time, just like way too long. I mean, maybe that's just my perfectionism kind of with it.
Yeah. So when it comes to the Tudor ones that you've done, you've mentioned obviously that your skills and everything has improved as you've done more, but what's one of your favorite Tudor ones so far?
I think it's been the most recent Queen Elizabeth, the first that I did. That one, just as I said before with the images, it just came together in terms of that just seemed like the perfect image. Like the hair in the modern one kind of looks like her hair in the older one, and it's just this bright red, and she's got this very dignified pose, and I think it encapsulates the spirit of Elizabeth I. And then I also really like my most recent Anne Boleyn, where she kind of looks a little sassy, and like it just, I think they really click for me when they look and they kind of capture the essence of that, the spirit of that person. That's usually when they end up being my favorite.
Yeah, and I love those too as well. I love the Anne in her ponytail. She just looks so cool.
Yeah.
Love it. So you've created, I think, images of all the Tudor monarchs, with the exception of Edward VI. Am I right? No Edward yet.
No Edward.
No Edward yet. So will you be bringing this young Tudor king into the 21st century anytime soon?
I believe so. I don't know about how soon, but I, you know, now that I'm more confident in my skills, I think I just didn't do it before because he was younger, and I've never actually done, well, I think I did Anastasia Romanov, and she was quite young, but that's not my favorite. I mean, that's a very old one as well. And so I've just never done like a teenager or a child. I know he was 15, 16. So I've just never done that age, but I feel like I could probably tackle it.
Fantastic. And you've got so many portraits of him which survive for you to have a little play around with. So
yeah,
that's good.
Probably more accurate. I love how you always end up kind of seeing some family resemblance when you work on them too. It's resemblance I didn't see like between Elizabeth I and Anne. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like you forget that Anne Boleyn is Elizabeth I's mother. I don't know why. It's almost like you separate, it's Henry and his six wives Elizabeth, and you forget that they're all related. So it's like you can see this resemblance between Elizabeth and Henry, and it's really cool.
Now, you're a self-confessed art and history lover. So what's one of your favorite Tudor portraits or paintings, and why?
I am going to say, actually, I think the Holbein sketches are my favorite.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why. Because he is such a talented portrait artist. Like, his portraits really look incredible. But I think there's something more lifelike to me about the sketches. I'm not sure why, but yeah. I think everybody kind of feels that way a little bit. There's like a little bit of magic. And I think at some point I want to work with his possible sketch of Anne Boleyn. I know that there's not a confirmed one, but working with some different portraits of her that look more lifelike probably than the National Portrait Gallery one that I've been working from. That was one of the things I was thinking about when I started, because Anne Boleyn pretty much is my favorite historical figure, like so many of us. And just how that National Portrait Gallery portrait of her, and who knows how close it is. I hope it is close to being her likeness, but there's so many to choose from. And I always thought that one just looked so stiff and pale and flat, and so in contrast to the descriptions of her as a human person, like a vivacious human person. So she was actually one of the first ones I did. I don't have that one up on my Instagram still because it was honestly bad. I still like floating around the internet. I still see it sometimes and I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys just let that one go away. And so that was the reason I did one of hers. But yeah, the Holbein sketches, I think, just have this sort of magic to them that I really love. There's one of this woman, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, called Mary Heveningham, I think.
Oh, yes, yes.
Probably like Heveningham or something. But she was a possible mistress of Henry VIII. She was Anne Boleyn's first cousin. And there's just this really beautiful Holbein sketch of her. And there's an entire Wikipedia list of his sketches and who they're attributed to, if anybody wants to check that out. But they're just, I don't know, stunning. And it gets you into seeing some Tudor people that were literally surrounding these people that you kind of forget about the extras, so to speak, in the story. So interesting.
Yeah, I love the Holbein sketches as well. And I've actually been reflecting on one of the ones, you know, labeled Anne Boleyn, the one where she's in the nightgown, the beautiful nightgown.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder if that possibly isn't Anne. I obviously need to do a little bit more research, but I haven't seen a good enough reason for us to just say that's not Anne. I actually don't know. And I've been studying this period for over a decade and I still have never seen anyone give a reason that really just goes, oh yeah, of course, you know, that's.
Yeah, they're just it might not be her. That's the only explanation. We have no idea who said it. No idea.
And comparing it to some of the other portraits, you'll find, and if you end up doing it, I'm sure you'll do that, and you'll find that there are a lot of similarities. And if it was painted in around 1534, she was pregnant, which would explain the sort of little bit of a double chin she's got at that time. And the nightgown is, of course, she was given many stunning nightgowns by Henry as gifts. So when people, I know people have put forward the argument that, oh, that's to show, you know, what a lax sort of household she ran, that she was strolling around in her nightgown. But no, in fact, it was probably because it was such an important gift from the king, you know, that she was shown in it. So interesting. It could be that could be her. We don't know. Becca, what's one of the greatest challenges that you've faced since beginning your work?
I think probably one of the biggest challenges I face is not being able to do certain figures because of the lack of likenesses or the lack of information. For instance, Europeans are obviously very easy to do because Europeans loved portraits of themselves and portraits of their monarchs and everything that were attempting to be photorealistic. And there's so many figures that we just don't have images for. So I've been wanting to do Montezuma of the Aztec Empire, but all we have is this really old European engraving that like doesn't even look like a person, and it probably wasn't even reflective of what he looked like. And then we also have this problem with a lot of African kings and queens where there's so many Mansa Musa, so many that are super famous and people always want me to do them, but there's just no information at all for what they look like, not even. And so I did Shaka Zulu, and that was from a contemporary statue that had been made, but at least it's something to work from, you know. So it's like, maybe he didn't look like this, but at least it's fun to see him, stuff like that. And so I've had that issue with a ton of African rulers, as well as East Asian rulers. Are their portrait style is just not realistic, it's very stylized. And so to get the like 3D information that you need a little bit more, it's just a little bit more difficult. And I would say another challenge that I wasn't expecting, because the Instagram account was pretty small for a while, I was doing it for 8 or 9 months, I think, before it got big. And I think I had 3,000 followers in January of this year.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. You must have just been like waking up in the morning going, where have all these people
come from? Well, there was one night, I think, and I'm not sure, I think it was that someone posted my Julius Caesar on Reddit and it got to the front page of Reddit. And so so many people saw it, and I went from like 3,000 followers to 17, I think, in one night. I was just like, what happened last night? Like, I'm just so confused. But the added level of scrutiny and vulnerability there is when you get a bigger follower has been a challenge sometimes. I mean, there's always really good constructive criticism that I obviously take into account and everything, but there's just a lot of vulnerability when you put an art piece out for 250,000 people. And so that's been a challenge as well. And definitely makes me think really hard about each one that I'm doing. And that's why I'm hoping to redo some of the older ones that I'm just not as proud of, but who cares? They were for 3,000 people that all shared love of history, not people that were like judging my Photoshop abilities. So,
Becca, tell us about the products that our history loving listeners can purchase from your Etsy store.
Yes. So I'm always coming up with new ones, but obviously the top sellers are, we've got some great bookmarks that have the Elizabeth and Anne reconstructions on them. Those are kind of probably the most popular thing, as well as the prints of them. So I do sell prints of the side-by-side personalities. And I'm hoping once I get all these Tudor wives redone in higher quality, like even some of these old Tudor wives are like 300 pixels wide, like they're just tiny, so they can't even be printed on anything anyway. And so once I get all of these redone, I'm hoping to get, you know, a bookmark set going and everything. I did a little illustration of the little Anne Boleyn bee necklace that I'm getting bookmarks in for tomorrow. So I'm excited about those. Yeah, get your bookmarks, get your prints.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've got mine. I can't wait for mine to arrive. So, Becca, we're up to the time of the episode where we play a little game that I call 10 to go. So this is just to get to know our guests a little bit better. So are you ready to do that?
I am ready.
Excellent. So what was one of your favorite childhood books?
I think Harry Potter.
Harry Potter was a big time
in my life, I think. Yeah.
Fantastic. And what would your ideal Saturday night kind of look like?
Oh, well, probably just I'm an introvert. I like hanging out either with my family or here with my fiance and just having a nice glass of wine or two, and just watching a movie or hanging out here.
And what's your favorite holiday of the year and why?
Christmas. I think it's because I like giving gifts. I love having people like see what I got them. Obviously everyone likes getting gifts, but I think it's just the way that everybody comes into town, and it's just has a nice feeling to it.
It does. That's my favorite holiday as well. What is something you love about where you live?
I love the warm winters in Dallas because I grew up in the Midwest and we have brutal cold winters. And so this fall has been really nice. Actually, I don't love the summers, but I think I don't know. We have a lot of stuff going on. We've got a lot of bars, restaurants that are useless to us right now. And, you know, just, yeah, there's a lot of stuff here. It's nice.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good stuff about Dallas, actually. I haven't visited. It's one day, hopefully, I'll be able to. So who is someone from history? It doesn't matter what period, or it can even be someone now, actually. It doesn't even have to be from history, that you admire and why.
I think Princess Diana. There's probably a lot of Princess Diana fans overlapping with all the Tudor and Titanic fans as well. I think for the same reason most people love her is just like her spirit. She kind of overcame this difficult situation and she was really sadly starting to really thrive at the end of her life. And I'm a person who's had very bad anxiety. I've got generalized anxiety disorder and Diana seemed to struggle with a lot of the same mental health issues and everything and then overcoming them. So love her.
And what was the last TV show that you binge watched?
I just watched Away on Netflix, which I think everybody is watching right now. But I watched it in like 3 days. Have you heard of it?
Yeah. I watched. I think I've only watched like a few episodes, but it's pretty good. Yeah. I do like it. I have to catch up on the rest. Do you have a favorite type of exercise?
I love walking and just I love going on a long nature walk. But I do a lot of weights as well. I mean, I guess I love walking. Walking is the most fun thing for me to do. Very relaxing for me.
Yeah, me too. I try to go every day on a nice sort of 5K walk at least, just to keep the mind sane in this time, especially. Exactly.
Good for the mental health.
It is so good. Do you play any board games? And if so, what's a favorite board game?
I love board games. There's an entire board game thing behind me. Yeah. But I love Settlers of Catan, as some people say.
Yeah.
I played a lot of Monopoly as a kid. That was always my favorite. Risk is a good one.
Yes.
A lot of them. A lot of the classics.
Now, what's a new skill that you'd love to learn?
I recently have thought about trying to get into learning 3D modeling on the computer. I have no idea how to get into it. I have no idea what it takes, but I would love to get into it. And then also I played the piano for years and years and we have a piano here and I don't play it often enough. And I would love to brush up on my piano skills a little bit.
And lucky last, if you could relive one moment, and it might be from your childhood or more recent, from your life, what would it be?
Relive one moment. I mean, probably like, this is like cheesy, but probably when we just got engaged in February in Italy, right before the coronavirus pandemic all happened. Probably that.
Yeah, probably beautiful. That. Yeah. How long did you spend there?
We spent 2 weeks. We were in Florence and Rome, and we got engaged in Florence, like right at the very beginning of our trip. And everyone, of course, was panicking because the coronavirus was like, it was right at that cusp. And it was kind of right where we didn't even really hear about it until the day we left that it was in Italy, and didn't have time to change plans or anything. But it was great. Everything was fine. There was like one person in Florence that had it. So it was totally not even worth panicking over. But it was just an amazing trip.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Lucky you got it in just in time. That's fantastic.
I know.
And the very last thing, and that was the last question, but the last thing that I ask all my guests on Talking Tudors is for a Tudor takeaway. So a little something for our listeners to go off and explore after the show. Sometimes people suggest books or films to watch or websites. Do you have a Tudor takeaway?
I do. I have a couple that of just things that have really caught my attention lately. I'm sure you've heard of the Tudor Travel Show podcast.
Yes.
And I've just listened to a couple of theirs recently that just seem very relevant to what I do, where they talked about the Mary Boleyn Tudor. It was called Mary Boleyn, a Tudor Beauty Revealed episode of that one, where they talked about the provenance of that painting and how they went about IDing it as Mary, which was very interesting. And there was another episode of that same podcast called The Extraordinarily Human Face of Elizabeth I, A Lost Portrait Revealed. And that one was super interesting because there was this Elizabeth I portrait in a private collection, and it came through the auction house. And it's just crazy that people are like holding on to these verified Tudor portraits. Like, how, stop being so selfish, you know, share a little. But it came through the auction house and kind of came to light very briefly, and now is in private hands again. But it was just an interview with the woman from the auction house, and it was very interesting. And then I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about Anne Boleyn, there's a great Claire Ridgway article about what Anne Boleyn really looked like, which I'm sure a lot of people have read. It's all the way back from 2010, so I'm not sure if there's been any new developments since then, but she kind of goes over each portrait of Anne and talks about which is maybe likely to be the most representative of her. And I know all we have is like a coin, which is like, I can't really work from that with my art, but you know, that's the most contemporary thing we have of her. But that one's really interesting for people that are curious about Anne Boleyn's looks. And that one is actually, it's called Anne Boleyn Portraits, Which is the True Face of Anne Boleyn, in case you have to search it.
Yeah, fantastic. And I can add links to that because they're both my dear friends that you've just mentioned. Oh, so thank you. Thanks for giving them both a shout out. That's fantastic. And I wanted to ask you just on the portrait medal, have you seen the reconstruction of Anne's portrait medal done by Lucy Churchill, stone carver?
I have.
That's much bigger. So that would be easier. You could definitely be guided from. And she is absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure if you wanted to reach out to her, she would just love it. Another dear, dear friend and very talented stone carver, apart from a million other things. So, yeah, I love her reconstruction.
I wonder if I could
proudly on my desk. Love it.
Oh, nice. I wonder if I could make kind of a artistic maybe reconstruction of that, obviously, where it doesn't look. Can't look exactly like that, but maybe just kind of an artistic rendering of it would be really cool. But yeah, I'm jealous of your friend group.
It's taken 11 years to build this Tudor friend group.
Yeah.
So anyway, Becca, it's been so lovely chatting to you, and I'm so glad I came across your account on Instagram and we were able to connect. So thank you so much for sharing. Natalie. Yeah, it's so great. And I look forward to seeing your new creations.
Thank you, Natalie.
As a little reward for listening right to the end, I have a very special offer to share with you. The wonderful Becca Saladin is offering all Talking Tudors listeners 15% off her Etsy store. Simply visit etsy.com/shop/royaltynow, make your selections, and enter the coupon code TALKINGTUDORS with no spaces at checkout to receive your discount. Now, on with the outro. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Talking Tudors. Thank you so much for joining us. I absolutely love to hear from listeners, so if you have any comments or suggestions, or just want to say hi, please get in touch with me via my website, www.onthetutortrail.com, where you'll also find show notes for today's episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the podcast with friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I also invite you to join our Talking Tudors podcast group on Facebook, where you can interact with other Tudor history lovers and hear all the behind-the-scenes news. You'll also find me on Twitter. My handle is on the Tudor Trail and on Instagram as the Most Happy 78. It's time now for us to re-enter the modern world. As always, I look forward to talking Tudors with you again very soon.